Hey guys, welcome back to Roundtable Rundown. I'm Alexander Hyman, and I'm here with Will Mallory and Gideon Hyman. Welcome back, my friend. It's been a minute, but we're glad to have you back. Today, we're going to be covering the hot topics of Duke basketball, just how dominant they were and how great that recruiting class looks to be after only one game. Then we'll go into the NFL coaching carousel, go into Denver, New York Giants, you know, some of our favorite teams here on the show. Then we're going to go into Alabama, the only team in college football that anyone cares about. Then we'll go into our classic HW Sports, and that'll be the end of our show. So let's start off with Duke basketball and just how dominant they were in that win over number two in the country, Kentucky. Will, what do you think about that game?
I mean, it was one of those games that I didn't really watch much of it.
What are we doing talking about the game then if you didn't watch
it? No, exactly. Yeah. So, disclaimer, you probably shouldn't listen to everything I say here. But I meant to say I didn't really watch the beginning part of it. By the time I checked, it was already 32 to like 12 or something. And I was like, whoa, what just happened here?
Yeah.
And we definitely knew this Duke team was really talented and loaded with freshmen, and all of them are spectacular. But I mean, I don't think I'd even realized, or any of us even realized, the magnitude of how good this team is going to be.
Well, actually, I hate to cut you off,
excuse me, one second here. Let me finish. I'm trying to say that Kentucky is a very, very solid basketball
and
program.
And a very well-coached team, by the way.
Exactly. And so for the fact for Duke to come in there and destroy, absolutely obliterate Kentucky there was actually, it's a huge statement.
And let's not forget they had the number two overall recruiting class in the country with Duke at number one.
Right.
Okay, but I mean, the fact that I don't care if you're number two recruiting class, number three, whatever, there's such a big discrepancy between Duke's recruiting class and everybody else,
right,
that's not even
right.
Fair. The reason I was cutting off Will is I actually knew at the beginning of the season how dominant this Duke team was going to be. You can ask Alex. I, guys, had the privilege this summer to actually work at Duke University and go to a few of these practices, and I told you, or I was telling Alex, I'm sorry, every time I would go watch these guys play, I was blown away. I mean, it was literally like watching NBA players play. Not to mention playing for Coach Krzyzewski, Coach K, one of the best coaches of all time, right? So when I saw at halftime that Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett already had like 25 points each or something like that, I couldn't say I was very surprised. However, that doesn't take away from the fact how amazing this team is. I mean, seriously, you know, Paul Pierce already said today he thinks that this team could beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland
right.
Cavaliers.
I don't know about that.
But you know, I don't know if we should believe the hype, but I have to say, when you have the number one overall recruit in the country, the number two, the number three, and the number nine, that makes you a pretty good team.
I mean, also when you look at it, the fact that Paul Pierce even said that, whether you agree with it or not, just shows like the magnitude. Like Paul Pierce is an NBA veteran and who.
A smart guy.
Exactly. And he knows
he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
And he knows he was in the league for so long, and he knows every, you know, the ins and out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to come out and say that Duke basketball, a college program, is better than an NBA team, actually is a statement. And it makes you wonder, maybe he is right. Maybe all of this is true. And after watching that game versus Kentucky, I mean, it's hard not to believe it.
Well, sorry to cut you off there, but what I was astonished by when I was watching this game, because I actually watched every minute of this game, is just how willing they were as passers, how quickly the ball moved around, how fluid the offense was. I mean, granted, it's only one game. We don't know if this can continue. And everyone was just so hot on the floor. But I was surprised by all of these guys, Cam Reddish, Zion Jones, RJ Barrett.
Zion
Williamson, excuse me. I was surprised how willing they were as passers because they were all the number one options on every team they've been on before.
It's like a quadruple. You know, you saw the Sports Illustrated cover. They call them the Fabist Five now, right? I mean, literally, it's impossible to stop them because one of them's driving down the floor. You have two unbelievable
exactly.
shooters on either side. I mean,
right.
It's unbelievable. So here's the bottom line. Everybody's going to be talking about Zion Williamson when they talk about Duke basketball right now, right? Everybody thought of him as a dunker. You know, everybody saw him on Instagram, House of Highlights, all these amazing dunks. His first basket as a college basketball player was a three-point shot deep from the arc, you
right.
know? So the thing, my biggest takeaway, I think, was, wow, this guy can actually shoot, too. I mean, I saw it all summer, so, I mean, you know, I was getting used to it, and I was trying to tell Alex. He didn't believe me. I mean, this guy, Zion, can actually shoot. He's 295 pounds, you know? So
right, with a 45-inch vertical,
right.
which
right.
is
so,
ridiculous.
By the way, if you guys haven't had a chance yet, I mean, all of you listeners out there, you know, take a chance and look at the ESPN Plus mini documentary on the Duke basketball team. You'll see a little highlight video of Zion getting his vertical test done, and he literally jumps over all of the bars in the top.
They had to add plates underneath the thing because he jumped higher than they were able to measure.
So the bottom line is all the hype's going to go to Zion. I want to talk about RJ Barrett for a second. He was the true number one recruit in the country. Steve Nash was his mentor.
Steve Nash is his godfather, actually.
Steve Nash is his godfather. He was unbelievable. He had 33 points in the entire game over Kentucky. I mean, he was an unstoppable force, left-handed player, southpaw. I just couldn't say enough about him. He was so vocal on the court. But the biggest thing for me is he had that three ball. Every single person on that team, as you're going to see in the documentary, can shoot the three ball, whether it's, you know, Jack White, their big white center, or it's Zion Williamson, or the guy who nobody's really going to talk about, who I think is unbelievable, is Cam Reddish.
You know, that's why I'm so excited to keep seeing this Duke team play, because, as you mentioned, I wanted to build off RJ Barrett. He was the number one player in the class. And for those of you who don't know, who don't really follow basketball, he led Team Canada, U19, to the gold medal in the U19 FIBA tournament over Team USA and Cam Reddish. This guy is no joke. He's been an MVP in every single game tournament he's been in, whether it be the McDonald's All-American game, the EYBL tournaments that he played in. This guy is the number one overall recruit for a reason, and I'm excited to see him play and showcase those talents and why I think he'll be the number one overall pick in the NBA draft next season. But I'm also excited to see Cam Reddish play because he didn't get the national hype that Zion did or the international hype that RJ Barrett might have gotten. And so I'm excited to see him play alongside these two unbelievable players who, although might take away some of his shine, well, I think will ultimately open up some more opportunities for him.
So I have a question for Will, and you know we can all answer this, but my consensus is at the end of the day, their whole starting lineup, except for their center, is all freshmen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, Will, how do you think going into the season that they're going to, you know, can they keep this up as freshmen? They don't know. They don't have the experience going into mm-hmm. March Madness. They don't have that, you know, veteran presence on the team because this is such a young team. You know, can they keep it up?
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say something about Coach K here because I think that a lot of credit is deserved to him. And, you know, it's confusing because you get some of the best players in the country to all come together on a team. Like it almost seems like, oh, the coach isn't doing anything because, mm-hmm. you know, you've got all these four best players in the country. All you have to do is put them on the court together and then magic
right.
happens.
Right.
But the fact that Coach K was able to bring them all together, humble them. You saw, like Alex said, the how fluid it was, all the passing, and mm-hmm. how they each took a backseat to each other. Like that says something about what Coach K has built already there. Because especially when you know you're the best player in your state, when you know you're the best player in the
country. Yeah.
You go in there thinking that you're the man and that you're going to get all the touches and you're going to score all
right.
the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they all worked together so well and didn't really.
Outshine each other.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They didn't really outshine each other. It just shows how Coach K
humbles them.
Humbles right? them, exactly. Yeah. And so to answer your question, I think that that basically Coach K is kind of the glue that locks them all together. And I think that, yes, it's going to be tough because they've never been there mm-hmm. before and they've never done they've never been to March Madness and whatnot.
Right.
But at the end of the day, Coach K has been there many times, and he
right.
knows exactly what to do and how to coach them. And I'm sure he's had a lot of freshmen in the starting freshmen going
yeah,
into their
of
first
course.
March Madness.
You know, so look at Kyrie Irving,
exactly.
Marvin Bagley.
Exactly.
So.
I'm not worried about Duke at all, and I think this team's going to be very dangerous. I mean, do you guys think they're going to win the?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I totally agree with you on that point of mm-hmm. Coach K. I mean, look at all these other teams who have done this before. A couple years ago, it was Kentucky who tried to go 22-0, but ultimately lost in the semifinals, I think it was. None of these other teams who have been one and done and had only freshmen have had the secret weapon that Duke has, which is the mind of Coach Krzyzewski. I mean, he's coached the greatest players in the world in LeBron and Team USA in the Olympics. He's coached Kobe and LeBron and everyone and Dwayne Wade together and got them to play that style of basketball that he's so famous for.
Right, he knows how
so
to
if he can do it with the best players in the world, he can definitely do it with these four freshmen. So I think the mind of Coach Krzyzewski will propel this team to, I'm just going to say it, they have the potential to be the best college basketball team of all time.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
That's a bold statement.
We definitely
saw
we definitely saw that they're able to do that. But
so I think the other piece of glue, you're talking about Krzyzewski as a glue, meshing them together. I think the other piece of glue that nobody's really talking about is Trey Jones. And I'm going to tell you why. If you guys, I don't know if you saw in Bleacher Report, they did an amazing article about the recruiting of all these guys and how Krzyzewski landed all of them. And essentially what Krzyzewski did is when he recruited Tyus Jones, Trey's brother, a few years ago, he recruited both of them. And Tyus didn't really want to go to Duke, but Trey was a diehard fan. Trey was like 12 years old when his brother was getting recruited. And Krzyzewski essentially came back a few years later and recruited Trey. Trey signed on to Duke. And Krzyzewski said, "I need your help, Trey. I know you're such a big fan and everything. I want to get Marvin Bagley. I want to get Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, and RJ Barrett, and I want you guys to be a super team, and I want your help recruiting all of them." And so when he would go on all these AAU circuits and all these tournaments, he would make friends with all of them. And essentially, to make a long story short, Trey Jones made a group chat called the Brotherhood, because it's the Duke Brotherhood, and it was him and, you know, these three other guys, and he got them all to commit. So imagine that. Marvin Bagley was supposed to be in the same recruiting class. Can you even believe that? That'd be crazy. And the only oddball out of it was Zion Williamson, because they didn't think Zion was going to commit because he was such a big superstar.
Well, they thought he was going to stay in his home state and go to Clemson.
Right. And, you know, nobody knew that they had this group chat going on, telling each other every day, like, "Oh, my gosh, like, we you know, I can't wait to see you guys. Can't wait to be at school." And Zion had told them from the beginning he was coming to Duke. So they've definitely been building that chemistry for a long time.
Wow, that's a really cool story. I mean, like you said, I think that's to the work of Coach K again, because, you know, the fact that he sought that out when he was recruiting his brother,
it's amazing.
He was 12 years old, yeah, to even start that, shows that he's thinking about the future. And this didn't all just fall in his lap. He worked for this position, and he's earned a spot as one of the best coaches.
He's
in the
most winningest coach in college basketball history for a reason.
So let's, you know, transition a little bit.
Speaking of coaches,
of one of the greatest coaches in their respective schools, let's talk about Nick Saban for a second, right? Alabama is college football right now. I don't think that there's anybody that can beat them. To be honest with you guys, in the beginning of the season, I really did not like the team. I was really upset with the way that they handled the Jalen Hurts situation. And I still feel really bad for him. He's kind of screwed. But, you know, leaving that alone for a little bit and just putting that aside, you can't stop this team on any front.
Right. You know, I've been so surprised by this team. Granted, I wasn't alive during the glory years of Miami, Notre Dame, the beginning of the USC, those storied programs. But from the highlights that I've seen, the 30 for 30s that I've watched, this Alabama team is playing with that swagger that all those great programs have. That swagger of, you cannot beat me no matter what you do. You saw that when they came into LSU and destroyed the number three team in the country, held them to a zero, held them to no points the entire game. Tua Tagovailoa is unbelievable. I have told many people many times, I have zero faith in lefty quarterbacks. I haven't seen it. I mean, Tim Tebow, Mike Vick was okay, never turned into one of the greatest that people thought he would turn into.
Okay. another comment. I'm going to let that go.
Let's bring this back.
Listen, you know, I have no faith in lefty quarterbacks, but Tua is completely proving me wrong. I think he's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. I think he's going to be the number one overall quarterback drafted in the 2020 class. I am so impressed by Saban and the way he's able to keep retooling and re-upping this roster in Alabama. And I don't see this coming to a close anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar to what we're talking about with Duke, is that this team is just loaded, and I don't really see any end for them soon.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in their way. I mean, you've seen here, we always accuse Alabama of scheduling the cupcake games. Like, you go and watch them play Southern Mississippi, and then it's like 65-0, and you're like, come on.
Right.
But then they go into LSU and beat them 29-0. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, yeah. Are you kidding me?
So here's my question, because my opinion, I mean, you guys may disagree with me here, is I actually think this is bad for college football. I think that Alabama is so much better than everybody else that there's literally no competition that can come close right now.
Yeah.
And I think that, in my personal opinion, Notre Dame can come close to putting a few points on the board. And Michigan can come close to putting a few points on the board, but it's just not even a close competition at this point. They're so much better.
When you look at the current college football playoff rankings,
right?
All this hype is always around 3 and 4 and what's going on there. But
it
Alabama
really doesn't matter.
Has been at the top since the very beginning, and we all know exactly what's going to happen when it comes time for the playoffs.
Sure, so. And I think it's going to be Alabama-Clemson again. Yep. And, you know, we have Trevor Lawrence, this new freshman hotshot who took over Kelly Bryant's job. And it's not even going to be close.
Yeah,
again.
I actually kind of agree with you there, Gideon, because I do think that it's not the best for college football. Only because this Alabama team is so strong. They have been so strong for a long time.
Right.
And now I don't even see it stopping next year, the year after. Like,
it's like the Warriors.
At what point you do something?
Yeah.
We were coming to an issue in a bunch of the sports here. We got the Warriors, we got Duke basketball, we got Alabama. There's super teams are such a culture of today's sport now.
Right.
Well, you know, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I used to agree with you both, but now I think it was Max Kellerman or Stephen A. Smith, one of them I heard talking about it. And they said, you know, I used to hate the Warriors, used to hate this whole idea that none of this all matters, we know what's going to happen. But now I feel that this level of greatness is rarely seen ever, you know? So why not just watch it and just be amazed by this level of greatness that we're seeing, whether it's the Warriors or whether it's Alabama, or whether it still remains to be seen whether this Duke team lives up to the hype.
I think it's because everybody loves a good underdog, and I think that it's impossible to have an unpredictable outcome at this point when these teams are so dominant.
You know, that's true, but sometimes it's nice to just – I mean, it's not nice, but sometimes it's important to see these teams that are just so good that they win every year, whether it was Michael Jordan's Bulls who went a three-peat twice, whether it was the Lakers and the Celtics where they met – I don't know how many times in the 80s.
Okay, but
that's
different because during the regular season, it's not like the Bulls won every single game for 6 straight years.
They had right. they won 72
but it's not like
and
that.
10.
It's not like that. Alabama literally.
But football and basketball are totally different sports.
That's why I'm not comparing them. You're making that comparison. I'm not.
I'm comparing the level of greatness.
I just don't see how this long-term is good for – and I don't have a solution, you know? I mean, Alabama, credit them. Great coaching, great recruiting.
The solution is to get other teams to get better.
Right.
If other teams can't catch up to Alabama,
right.
Then this isn't Alabama's fault at all.
And look, if you're a recruit and you're watching these games, you're like, damn, I really want to go to Alabama.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
So they are winning on all fronts. I just don't I'm just not entertained anymore as a college football fan. I don't know if that's a bad thing to say, but I'm just putting it out there.
I totally disagree. I am completely entertained when I watch Alabama. I know I'm watching one of the best dynasties to ever set foot on turf in terms of football.
I think
so by watching Alabama and watching the greatness of Nick Saban, I am entertained.
I think it's a very intriguing discussion, especially both sides of that, because I think you do have to look at, oh yes, this is the best team. I really do savor this. But as a fan of another team, like you have no shot. Like you have absolutely no shot. So if you want to be
soul being ripped out of your heart,
okay, that might be a little extreme. But if you want to be the person who just values the integrity of the sport and appreciates the sport, then sure, that works out. And like, oh, this Alabama team is so good. But if you're an LSU fan, like come on, man,
yeah.
This is just a bummer, and like
I mean,
it's frustrating. It's not going to end anytime soon. So
well, listen, you got to give teams like LSU credit. They've gotten much better over the last few years. They're number 3 for a reason. Last week, it's the simple fact that they just have to get better. You know,
yeah.
Alabama is so it's such a well-oiled machine at what they do. Other schools just have to catch up.
Yeah, I have a real quick question for you guys. This is like not really on topic, but I'm actually really curious. Like, do you think that if the NCAA started paying some of their players, that this problem would be maybe solved? Because in this case, maybe some of those high-level recruits who are only thinking Alabama, Alabama, Alabama might get a little bit more money at some places.
I think that's
and
very
then we'll go
interesting.
There.
I think that you know, it would obviously depend on how the
how they're being compensated.
Money allocation would work. You know, would it be an even salary for every player, or would you be able to essentially sign players like free agents? If it was like a free agent kind of system, I think 100% it would help because, you know, Alabama would run out of money essentially. You know, they wouldn't be able to sign all these good recruits. And I hate to say it, these guys are getting money anyways.
That's what I was going to say. It happens anyways. Promoters are pushing students to certain colleges.
Right. And so I don't know. I think that's very intriguing. I just think that, you know, long term there needs to be a solution because there's nothing slowing Saban down right now. He has all the recruiting classes lined up. He's winning all the games. Everybody wants to come to his school. He already has Tua Tagovailoa's brother, you know, lined up. They're just not slowing down.
Yep. Good job to Saban. He's definitely winning right now.
So speaking of amazing coaches, you know, like Saban, let's talk about some pretty bad coaches we've been seeing in the NFL. You both are fans of teams which probably have two of the worst coaches, no offense, in the NFL right now. I mean, Alex Pat Shurmur has been a horrible disappointment in his first season. And Will, I hate to say it, even though I'm a huge fan of Vance Joseph, he just can't win games. So me overall, I was really excited about going into this year because we had so many new head coaches, right? Matt Patricia for the Lions. You know, the Colts had a new head coach in Frank helping out. Reich, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Nagy with the Bears.
With the Bears. Arizona Cardinals have a new head coach in Steve Wilkes. The Giants have Pat Shurmur. There's so many new head coaches, and really the only successful one so far has been Matt Nagy with the Bears. So granted,
he hasn't even been that successful.
Well, I disagree with that.
But let's just keep going for a second. Let's talk about Vance Joseph, Will, because you are an expert in this frontier. I don't know what the Broncos' problem is at this point because they got their quarterback. You know, maybe Case Keenum's a little disappointing, but look at him last year with the Vikings. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, like, I'm obviously not going to express all my frustrations on here because it would not be appropriate, but let me just put this simple. This guy is a terrible coach, and you know, you always want to support your coach as long as possible. And I think that there was a lot of Broncos fans from day one who were already saying, you know, this is not the guy and whatnot. I was not one of those people. I gave Vance a solid shot for a year and a half, and I can now say that he is just terrible. I could fully do a better job out there. If you watch a Broncos game, you will see the decisions he makes are just absolutely,
he's not cut out for the job.
It's absolutely mind-blowing decisions he makes. For example, last week he basically took a 60-plus yarder with 15 seconds left with hot heavy winds and with his confidence in the kicker. But 60-plus yards is almost ridiculous.
With the wind.
Exactly. And so he missed it, obviously. And the Texans, all they did was march 10 yards down the field and kick the field goal of their own for like 40 yards.
Right.
And that's just a terrible decision because now you're down by six. You ended up losing the game.
Did you see what happened? Did you see what Bill O'Brien said afterwards?
Oh, yeah. No, Bill O'Brien had some expletives, too, that he expressed about how
Bill O'Brien afterwards
Vance
was quoted accidentally, didn't know that the camera was filming him. And he said, "Good job, Vance. You expletive idiot."
Something like that.
Something like that. I mean, come on. I mean, so here's the bottom line. We have so many, I would say, inept or inadequate head coaches in the NFL, ranging from Pat Shurmur, who I think should have just been an offensive coordinator for the Vikings, Vance Joseph, who really probably should have stayed a defensive backs coach, all the way to Hugh Jackson at the Browns.
Yep. Yeah.
That's my transition here.
Right.
The Browns are always a mess. But they were looking pretty good. I mean, they tied the Steelers. They went to like three or four overtime games. I was actually pretty surprised. And I think that they may have found their quarterback of the future in Baker Mayfield. I mean, what do you guys think about the future of the Browns?
Well, I think Baker Mayfield is going to be a franchise quarterback. I think that's why the Giants actually took Saquon Barkley second overall. Because
you think they would have taken Baker?
I think they would have taken Baker. I think with the talent that was displayed.
You think that they took Saquon because Baker was taken?
Yeah, I do.
No, I
do.
They took Saquon because they wanted Saquon, and it was actually a very smart move.
Listen, I completely disagree with that. Everybody
can I talk for
shocked.
1 second?
Everybody was shocked that Baker went first overall. Nobody saw that coming.
Listen, I am not saying I am mad about Saquon Barkley. I think we made the completely correct decision. I am so happy we have Saquon Barkley on our team. He has generational talent. Unbelievable. I am just saying that let's just go into the Giants really fast. Pat Shurmur, I completely agree with you 100%, should never be anything more than an offensive coordinator. He is not fit out to be a head coach.
I don't know if I agree with that. I just don't because
based on his record as a head coach,
based on what we saw last year, I know he's the offensive coordinator. I know it's not the head coach, but look, at the same time, he's still calling the plays. It's almost the same thing.
Right, but I don't think he has
time out. What's the problem then? Because is it Eli Manning? Because you
Well, he had Case Keenum last year who clearly can't prove himself in Denver.
Right.
So, like,
the problem? You have,
there should be no problem.
You have Sterling Shepard, you have Odell Beckham, you have Saquon Barkley. This offense should be amazing.
Listen, there's a multitude of problems. One of them, is definitely Eli Manning. He is a washed-up quarterback, has no place in the NFL.
Okay.
Number two.
Dude, you cannot say that about your franchise quarterback.
Oh, I can say it all. I want. You just heard me say it.
The amount he has done for you guys is actually unbelievable. Yes, I get it. He's not meant to be in the game right now, but you would be without two Super Bowls if it were for Eli Manning. So I would stay away from criticizing him.
Eli Manning is my Lord and Savior. He will be in the Hall of Fame one day.
Excuse me. You just said that he was.
Right now, he is washed up and has no place in the NFL.
All
right. With that being said, it is not completely his fault because the offensive line is so bad.
Yep.
Nate Solder has drastically underperformed. Will Hernandez is the only glimmer of light on the offensive line. Even he hasn't been unbelievable. Granted, he's a rookie. Thank God we got Jamon Brown from the Rams.
Yeah,
that was a huge pickup.
Huge. I don't know
why
the Rams
is unbelievable.
Cut him. He's so good.
But my thing with Gettleman, granted, he is dealing with a horrific disease and cancer, and his attention hasn't been 100% on the Giants. I don't give him any fault with that. But his number one intention when he came into the Giants was to get his hog mollies. Where are the hog mollies? He traded away Damon Harrison. The offensive line is no better than it was last year. What is going on?
Well, I think he tried to get the hog mollies in Soldier and in Hernandez, and clearly Soldier isn't working out very well.
But he stayed with Eric Flowers, who has been terrible.
Well, now he's
ever
gone.
Since he brought into
now
the league.
Now he's gone.
Exactly. We cut him halfway through the season because which should have been done years ago.
Yeah.
Pat Shurmur. My one thing with Pat Shurmur. Sorry for cutting you off really quickly. I think
is
Pat Shurmur. My thing with Pat Shurmur is I think he's actually a very good offensive coordinator. I don't think he has the gusto to lead men. You know, to be a head coach, you have to be that Sean McVay type of guy. You have to be that Bill Belichick type of guy.
Those are two very different types of people,
yeah,
so I don't understand.
Exactly.
I don't understand
but they both
this
have.
This is a very faulty argument. You're saying he's a great play caller, and the offense has been horrible.
But that's different
pieces.
Than being a leader of men. To be a head coach, you have to be a leader.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you said he was a good play caller. I'm saying he's a horrible play caller.
I'm saying he's a good play
caller.
Do you see what he did with Case Keenum last year? And look at Case Keenum this year with the Broncos.
That's exactly what I'm saying. How is the offense for the Giants so horrible?
Because of the offensive line and because Eli cannot get the ball more than a check down to Saquon Barkley.
Okay, and so what you start to consider here is, yes, we understand that those are valid points, but why did the Giants not pick up like a Teddy Bridgewater? Why did they let go of?
I don't know. I completely agree with
you. That is probably the dumbest part of all this because now they're just screwed
agree.
And now they're pretty much tanking. And it's disappointing because they're probably one of the most concentrated teams with stars in the entire NFL. And
I
for
agree.
The fact that they're this bad is actually just it's terrifying and it's really sad. The Giants should are
listen.
Better
and
than
we
that.
May look back on this and they may get a franchise quarterback in the next 2 years and be like, wow, they played it really well. They got Saquon, they got Odell, they got this franchise quarterback. Great job. But right now, I don't see a plan for the Giants for the next few years.
Okay, we could go on about this for hours, hours, days on days, but we're going to give you guys a little ear break because that was a lot of yelling. And we'll check in back with you guys next week. Before we wrap up, we just want to send our hearts and prayers and thoughts out to the victims of the shootings in Thousand Oaks. You know, this was a really tough one. There's been a lot going on around the country, and, you know, everybody's hearts and prayers and thoughts are with these families. We wish you guys the best. But to end out on a positive note, thanks for listening, guys. Really appreciate it, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.